Driver. I'm head of drama and theater studies at the University of Galway, a proud Babarow board member, and also the research lead on LEAP, the project that we're about to talk to you about, a collaboration between Babarow International Arts Festival for Children, Moonfish Theater, and drama and theater studies at the University of Galway. So we're going to take a moment here to go down the row, and everyone will have a chance to introduce themselves in whatever language or languages they choose to use here today. And I'll say to you, you may think this is the largest panel you've ever seen, but in fact, half of the audience is also composed of people who also took part in this project in a number of ways. This is a cast of thousands. That's part of the story that we hope to unfold to you here today in terms of what's needed to make this work happen, to make it meaningful. But without further ado, I'm going to hand it down the row to my beloved collaborators.
Hola, me llamo Rachel. Soy de Nuevo México. I'm Rachel. I work with Babarow as the artist and program coordinator, and I had the privilege of working quite intimately with this project and these wonderful people up here today.
Hello, Maeve is Anandum, August is Alien Torme. I think I said that right. I was working on this project initially, I think, as a mentor for Moonfish with the background history that I have working with Change of Address. But I think the role kind of evolved as we went, but maybe we'll get into that a little bit more as we're chatting.
Salut, mă numesc Alexandra Crăciun și sunt un artist român care locuiește în Dublin. So my name is Alexandra Crăciun. I'm a Romanian artist that lives in Dublin, and I'm one of the four artists that responded to Lipsco.
Dzień dobry, nazywam się Justyna Twodzińska, jestem jedną z artystek, która brała udział w LEAP, mieszkam w Limeryk i zajmuję się również Festiwalem Sztuki Polskiej. So my name is Justyna Twodzińska, Justyna Twodzińska, and I'm from Polish origin, and I live in Limerick, and I was one of the artists chosen for the LEAP project. Yahoo!
Hola, sou Fernanda Ferrari, and I forgot how to speak in Portuguese. Okay, you try.
Eu sou brasileira, eu moro na Irlanda fazem 7 anos, eu sou artista, eu trabalhei no Brasil por 20 anos, mas quando eu mudei para cá demorou muito tempo para eu voltar a ser artista. So I'm living in Ireland for 7 years, but took like long time, a lot of different works to be able to become and work with as an artist. And I'm one of the 4 artists, we are missing one here, who was lovely, amazingly chose to be here, and I'm really grateful for that.
I'm Jo Cummins. I'm the producer for Moonfish Theatre. We were approached by Rachel and the team at Babarow a long time ago now to collaborate on this project. So I'm very, very privileged to have been part of it from the early stages of assembling the
college.
Board? What are they? Yeah, the advisory group. And then the call out, and then watching the workshop come together. I didn't actually get to be a part of the workshop, but still have things to say about it.
Die Rieb, es mich ja Ioni Nichronin, es ist mein Co-Stjordahor Moonfish Theatre. My name is Ioni Nichronin, and I am co-director of Moonfish Theatre. And as Joe said, we've been very privileged to be involved in this project. We designed the workshop and have been working with the artists since then as well. We're kind of part of a mentoring scheme that has followed on from LEAP. So it's been an amazing adventure for us.
So I'm going to set the scene for us today in two ways. Number one, how to understand or engage with what you're witnessing here today. One of my colleagues up here, Maeve, said to me, Charlotte, this is like a commercial or a preview for what is going to come next, which is a full-length evaluation and report telling the story of this project and its place within a wider Irish and international arts landscape in a way that only an academic can. Too long, too detailed, but hopefully some really good moments in there. That will be coming out later this year and will be launched alongside Babarow's first ever equity, diversity, and inclusion strategy. And I just really want to give a shout out to Babero and their generosity in terms of facilitating and giving us the space to go through this process together, having the ambition to bring together someone like me, someone like Moonfish. And I'll tell you in a minute why this particular group of people came together and working on that new policy in a very practice-based way with the huge learning and community that has been built out of this project. So we're going to give you a preview of a really long story that started almost exactly 2 years ago today before leading to the LEAP workshop that we had in April. And what happened was Babero, and I'll be asking Rachel directly about this in a moment, had an idea around looking at themselves, looking at who was appearing on stage in terms of diversity of representation, which at first seemed like a very easy thing to name or to say that we wanted to change, but we got into much more detailed conversations about what that means in terms of protected characteristics within Ireland, what that means in terms of how we think about our minority ethnic populations and those among us who are from backgrounds of migration. It got big very fast, but it started from this impulse around challenging who was in our audiences, who was on our stages, who was working within the organization. So they approached me, who has a background in migration and intercultural studies in theater. They approached Moonfish, who worked through Irish language as well as English, and were interested in doing the same kind of project with their own ensemble. And they said, what can we build? What can we do together to begin to make some progress in this area for their organization, but more broadly in the sector? So that was my understanding of it when I was asked to come on to the project. And I'm now going to take the first question to Rachel. So Rachel, so for Babero, what felt urgent and important about trying to do something like this?
Just as a precursor, I actually started Babero a little bit after this process had begun, which just shows you how, this is my third festival, that shows you how long this process has been. But as I was brought into it, I came to understand that Babero realized, especially in our school's audience, we have such a diverse audience. And these kids are coming and seeing shows and seeing a festival put on by people who don't represent them, and the stories don't necessarily represent them, and we can do more to make sure that they're represented. And, you know, so this is obviously a process. There's no kind of end solution necessarily, but LEAP was born out of this really strong desire and this need to address that and to really reach our audiences.
So for Joe and Ionia, you came on a bit later as well from the very, very beginning, but from Moonfish's perspective about what interested you about this project, how it connects to your own work right now, what was the draw and what did you hope to do through it?
It connected with our goals as a company, really, didn't it?
Yeah, it was serendipitous because we had been having exactly those conversations that Rachel was talking about, about our own work, because we work as an ensemble. So our work is created by the ensemble. So it means that we're always using the same performers. So it was obviously something that we had to address as well. And it was just very serendipitous that Babero came to us with this suggestion, and we were absolutely on board with just learning. We wanted to learn and grow, and it was just the perfect platform.
And so, Maeve, you mentioned that you came on to this project with a background, having founded and worked on the Change of Address Collective, where you work and do projects with those coming from who are displaced or and are within the Irish direct provision system. When you came on to this project, what were your expectations, and what, if anything, do you think changed for you?
I mean, I think starting into a project like this, you don't have very set expectations. You're kind of coming, listening and being as open as possible. And I think one of the first things, talking to Elaine and then sort of like getting deeper into the project in the very initial stages of it, I was just really impressed by Babero's ambition, I think, to follow through with this as a change across the organization, but not just thinking about it in one way. You know, it wasn't just we're going to introduce policy. It wasn't just we're going to introduce, you know, new ways of making work. It wasn't just we're thinking about it for the festival. It was looking at the stratified way that any ecosystem functions and thinking about how does all of this change. And I think the ambition in that initially was something that was really appealing to me and felt like it had a huge integrity. And I think that that's tracked across the project. Yeah. So I think in terms of how it evolved, it's such a huge
question. I don't know.
The project, like many, has been elongated by COVID. But we were discussing this earlier, and I think one of the maybe organic outcomes of that unexpected delay was a recognition of the scope and the extension that you need to do something like this well, if you are coming at it in that sort of multifaceted, transdisciplinary way. So I think we were odd beneficiaries maybe of the extension that COVID gave us.
Mm. And Joe, from your perspective, what do you think were some of the major things that we grappled with earlier on in the project, or that we learned as we tried to do the thing?
For me, I remember having a conversation with Rachel very early on along the lines of, I think Maeve, you were maybe on that call as well, we were all very aware that the people attempting to bring this change in an organization, we all looked the same, we all sounded very similar, from similar backgrounds. That was an issue for me. But I think so frequently artists can tie themselves up in knots and allow these embarrassments to like hold a project back. And we just kept going, no, we have to keep reaching out to different people. We have to keep making new connections. We have to make sure we don't take our foot off the gas. And it would have been very easy to do that, I think, with everything shut down again. Oh, everything's shut down again. Now we can't come into the office this week. That happened a lot at the beginning of the project. And it was really great to be a part of and watch the resilience of everyone on board and the determination to get over those obstacles and look at the aims of the project, look at how the project was progressing, and be prepared to say, actually, we did that wrong, or we worded this incorrectly, or we have reached out to the wrong people. Let's go back to the drawing board. We did that a couple of times, and I think the project ended up the stronger for it.
I would say that one of our major learnings at the beginning, we intended to be ambitious. We intended to be dovetailing this with the EDI policy, the new one from the beginning. But we also started out too big. We thought we were going to do this workshop and have a partnership with a local school in Duishka and have a performance at the end of the week. We were trying to, number one, you know, do as much as possible because the work felt urgent, but we had to scale back when it came time to us writing the report rather than try to hide that. We wanted to actually write the story of that because we felt that so much in this kind of work, you either, you know, you don't see the backstage, and the backstage is really important to keep the energy, to keep it going, to go towards that incremental change. And on the question that Joe raised, you know, about our own identities as an ensemble as well, you know, we've tried to be very sensitive to the difference between speaking for or mistaking the effort that we're putting in as having solved it, or just that we're great, and that we have to have a responsibility to show up and do the work in a really detailed and rigorous way, which is how we've tried to keep pushing on it.
There was a moment I remember where we realized we really wanted to do something now and have a workshop now. And so I can't remember who said, I think we need to spend a year working on building a community and building an advisory board that will inform how we choose who is involved in the project. We've got to slow down. And I thought that was really valuable.
Mm. There was a moment as well where, and I think it was probably me, where the thinking just got kind of insane. Where, that, you know, for what was available within the budget and what was practical within you know, the capacity of the organization, you know, we decided, you know, we're going, okay, so everyone who applies is in, it's going to be a community, and it's, you know, it's never going to stop. It's not going to end. There isn't a beginning. There isn't a middle. There isn't, you know, that this is a different way of doing things and quite radical.
and then you hit the moment where you're like, yeah, it's not going to happen though, is it? But like, I think there's a usefulness in being able to push out maybe into that kind of radical thought space to see, oh, well, okay, we can't do that, but is there ingredients from that way of approaching it that actually we can integrate? And I think probably one of the outcomes from that is the ongoing mentorship and this sort of like much more elongated kind of long-term commitment to progressing those relationships.
But a learned long-term or a medium-term commitment with clear promises that can be kept and mm-hmm. boundaries within mm-hmm. it as well. So we very concretely said to people after this, you know, if you're on the scheme, you can have 2 days of mentorship or a gap day at X amount of money. You know, we are coming together at the festival. So to be really concrete in that, to say as well, there were kind of two iterations about the advisory board and even the call, because we started out saying, okay, we want to diversify Irish theater. But what did we really mean by that, right? Were we really just talking about artists of color? And when we're talking about artists of color living in Ireland, you know, the majority of those who have emigrated to Ireland, who have made a life here in the last generation, are actually from Eastern European communities, right? So were we retokenizing and kind of how we were thinking about this potentially? Were we also not thinking about broader definitions of diversity in terms of ability, in terms of class, in terms of sexuality? So we'd go kind of quite big, then quite narrow, and then quite big, and then eventually came around to being more specific about inviting participants to come from minority ethnic or racial backgrounds and or from backgrounds of migration. But that took a long time in the process and a lot of head wrecking and several iterations of the advisory panel before we got there. And that's important to say. It's important to the story because to be specific allows you to do the work to reach the people. So we then moved to the phase of actually releasing the call out, because I'm excited to bring in our eventual and fantastic first cohort of participants here. Fernanda, Justina, Alex, this call goes out with this invitation. Are you someone with an interest for making theater for children and young audiences? You answer the call. Why? And why did you feel seen or not by the call?
I'm going to start by saying this is like I've been living in Ireland for 5 years, and this is the second call I ever answered artistically. The first one was with Babar, also for the Finnegan. I didn't get into that one, but you know, I answered because it was for me. I answered because as a migrant artist who, in not full honesty, has walked a bit away from her profession, just out of, you know, it's a whole conversation there about the background I come from. I wasn't really finding any open doors or any calls that would suit me. And talking about, you know, that imposter syndrome and not feeling worthy of actually going and knocking on a door of an institution. Hey, I'm here. I'm not sure I'm good at this or I know anything or you want me. So I answered the call because it was clearly for me. Mm.
Justina.
For me, when I read it, I couldn't believe it because it was one of the first one I saw that was so specific and really targeting the minority group. And many calls when you see and you kind of feel, okay, I give it a shot, but the possibility to get in is very slim. But this one was so specific about what is it that Babar is looking for. And then my heart just jumped and I said, I go to the clinic and I learn more. And then I'll decide if this is really what I think it is or what is it really. And then I decide if I apply or not. So the clinic was just magical. And the way that you guys became, I knew this is it's not going to be a formal thing where you research something from the perspective of a circus, but that it's going to be great fun. And I thought, oh my God, if I just get in, this will be like $1 million ticket, you know? So I put all my heart into the application. I said, I just have to get it right. Just have to get there. And it happened. Mm.
Fernanda.
It's amazing reading the report, the time that it took to create the open call. And listen, you guys, I get emotion every time I talk about this. But I receive a message from a friend who is also migrant. She said, this is for you. That was the right. And I felt the same. I said, that's for me. Everyone was in a different stage. Like I have 20 years of experience in theater in Brazil. But here I was just really starting to work as a performer, start to work specifically with kids that I love. And so it was just perfection. And it's because it was not just come and do a workshop. It's a workshop. It's a mentorship. People are going to be there for you. And you're going to have this and the opportunity, I think, especially for arts, not just migrant, to have a space to rehearse or to meet new people. And because for me, it was
what was missing. Like, I would start to work with children, but I don't have any experience to work with children in Ireland, not for just Irish audience, but Irish audience today, it's just like Brazil, it's 70,000 Brazilian living in Ireland. So like, how to do a theater for this amazing diversity of audience in a way that, like, I didn't know how to start. And the call was amazing because it's about to learn how to even to write to a grant or to apply for something. It was like a whole pack that for an artist, migrant or not, was a read like amazing and was so specific and so clear that...
And very easy to apply.
Exactly.
Like, hey, put in a video or write us or I don't know. It was very versatile.
Because that is a really difficult thing. And I heard a lot from a lot of artists. I can say for Brazilian people, it's like, it's so difficult to apply for anything. I can't, the barrier of the language, and they feel afraid to apply. So it was just straightforward.
Very straightforward, and the application process was really clear and very simple. So that was amazing, because it wasn't very often people are discouraged to even try, because they said, I don't even know how to go about it. And it was none of that with the call, which encouraged you to just share, because you wanted us to share as much as we can. And that was the beauty of it, I think.
And I just kind of want to, the clinic that Justina was referencing, as we did a Zoom info session, which of course many people, the Arts Council does that as well. It's becoming more, but we became very kind of conscious in this durational process that there needed to be a human element from the organizations involved, from Moonfish and Babro. And that needed to be the ultimate, like, it needed to be us connecting with you guys as humans. And so, but to have that, so then, you know, you guys got the call out, but then to be able to see our faces and know who was on the other side of the email, that became very important. So that's what that clinic was.
To share a couple of other pieces of learning, we had a graphic design by Catherine Osequoia, who was on our advisory board as well, which had the title of the program and then pictures of different kinds of artists from a variety of racial and ethnic backgrounds. We had a lot of considered conversations about who are we representing, how are we representing intersectional identities within that. We wanted there to be a shorthand visually, as well as this more streamlined application process. That being said, you know, it was challenging to figure out how to streamline it, what kind of was the range of accessibility supports that we could provide. So I'd love to hear from Maeve, Joe, Ionia, or Rachel, any reflections about that part of the process in terms of the invitation and then what we could offer.
Do you remember, Maeve, we had a lot of chats with one of the members of our advisory board, Trina Haldar, from the Spark Arts Festival in the UK. She was really passionate that we quickly get an image, and she talked about her own experiences coming up as an artist in Leicester, saying you would see very wordy long call outs and think, how on earth can I know whether or not this applies to me? But she said an image with maybe four people on it who don't all look the same, she said immediately that would speak to her and say, oh, this could be for me. So I think that was really, that was the start of, oh, actually, this is getting here.
Yeah. And I think that touches on something that maybe is really obvious to say. But we were able to look, say, to some of the work that Project have been doing with the WEF call out and with like various simultaneous sort of efforts that were happening across the industry, and to think about, you know, how it was happening and what made sense, you know, across the board. But Trina was brilliant. And I think having the access to international sort of examples is something that I would take on personally as a tool going forward. There was a difficult moment, I would say, in the streamlining, as you describe it, where again, it was that thing of how much can we achieve within this project versus wanting it to be as open as possible. And so we had conversations about, you know, is it also, are we able to provide for members of the traveler community, for members of the disabled community? Like, what is the language? What are the images that we're using, and who are we really reaching out to? And I think that was a hard moment to sort of to have to zoom in, but also realistic to be able to deliver something well, to have to make those choices. And I think having the advisory board that we did made it possible to make those choices well, I hope.
To then provide a framework for doing this again, hopefully, or doing something similar for a different group of people.
Yeah, and an argument, I would say, for tripling the funding.
Yeah.
Tripling
funding. Because that's the point at which you don't have to edit so much in that selection process. And I think, how magical would it be to have that degree of inclusivity? And I'd be really excited to see where triple the funding would get us to.
Let's all say triple.
three times.
So I'm going to ask Rachel a question about the particular accessibility supports that we decided to build into this and offer, and plans for bringing that into other Babero programs before we go to workshop design. So I'm coming to you next, Ionia. So Rachel, so as part of this, when we announced the call, we were saying that there was particular extra funding available for people in terms of additional needs. So can you talk to us about that and Babero's plans for that in the future?
Yeah. So we did one of kind of the hard decisions we made in kind of making this a more specific call out was, again, diversity. If you just say diversity, oh my God, that's so much. So we did narrow it down to, as Charlotte already said, to artists of migrant backgrounds or ethnic and racial diversity. But intersectionality exists in every identity, so we wanted to still provide access support. But we did this on a very small budget. So what can you offer then? So we did have a small kind of pot for access funds that we could offer for if we needed to be able to offer some kind of childcare. But all of this was very limited, and this is something that Babero would like to continue. We're trying to grow this into a kind of yearly thing that we can have an access fund at our festival, because it's really important. This is a huge way to make sure that we're inclusive within our sector. But again, I think a lot of the accessibility then came down to, which is still an incredibly strained resource, but humans, making sure that there was a human who could get on the phone. And yes, I was taking a lot of phone calls, which was also amazing because I got to actually meet Fernanda before even the process really kicked off, because we got to talk on the phone. Dogs. Yeah. exactly.
Dogs, not just for kids.
So that it's planning then for that triple the funding, the additional human resources in order to make the invitation as open as possible, not only here, but hopefully someday on other calls and in the festival more broadly. So then, Ionia, at the point you came onto the project yourself, and Maeve and Mufado Yusuf and others were trying to then plan what would actually happen when we came into the room together. So can you take us a little bit into that behind the scenes before we arrived?
Sure. I suppose the most important thing was for us to make sure that we were creating a workshop that was going to benefit the participants. It sounds very obvious, but the applications were all very varied. Because it was open, you were getting applications from people who maybe had no experience in creating theatre to people who had much more experience. So we decided to hold off on creating the workshop content until the participants had been chosen. And then we contacted the participants in order to find out what exactly they felt would be the most useful thing to learn from the workshop, or tools to bring away from the workshop. So that was very valuable to us. We chatted with the participants.
I need to say something. For us, it was like, receive a call. So what do you want to learn? What's your need? I said, oh my God, that's too good to be true. Like, really, I can not choose, but can I collaborate in house and how to create this? Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, it was so valuable to us as well. And what we did then was that we sat down, myself, Maeve, another member of Moonfish, Zita, and Mustafa Yusuf, to create the content. And it was a 4-day workshop. So we were aware that we were trying to fit a lot into a short amount of time. But we decided to break it down into basically the idea was to have the participants walk away with the tools to really get something on its feet. Not necessarily bring it to an audience, but to feel like they were empowered. And we tried to do that in a number of levels. We were aware that as a theatre company, we could come into the room and be like, this is how we do things. Bye. But we really wanted them to know that there's so many ways. There's so many ways to access your inspirations. So we came at it from, you know, the physical puppetry. We tried to bring music, song. We talked a lot about bilingualism or multilingualism on stage. So we were coming at it from loads of different avenues. And then we also had a day where Maeve led a day-long workshop in producing, because we felt that was, you know, obviously incredibly important. So I think it was very valuable to be able to collaborate with participants beforehand. I would say that is a great way to start. And then it was really, I suppose, the way Moonfish work is that we, as an ensemble, always invite anyone in the room to be participating in the work. So it was very valuable as well to have Charlotte, Jill and Rachel in the room as well, actually taking part in the work, because I think it was an incredible environment. Everyone was involved. There was no one on the outside looking to see, is this experiment working? And I think we all found that very valuable. And there were so many different perspectives in the room as well. So that was another element that really added to the content, I think. And I suppose I just want to mention as well that obviously, I mentioned before that we're trying to evolve our company. But at the moment, when we created this workshop, we were an all-white Irish company. So we really wanted there to be someone in the room who was representative of maybe something, you know, like we wanted to make sure basically that we weren't just an all-Irish white company leading a workshop for people, you know, from other backgrounds. So that was one of the reasons we asked Junior Yusuf to come into the room. He's Nigerian-Irish. And I felt that was really important. And I think it did have a big impact. And it's just something to mention that I think it's worth considering, you know, when you are thinking about who you are in the room, not just the content, but actually just physically who is giving the workshop. It can be very impactful as well.
Yeah. Like, is there a version of Leap 2 years from now where you guys are the facilitators?
Yeah. Now, they've been so excited to talk about In the Room. So we're finally getting to In the Room. So participants, so In the Room, were the participants, also including Justin and Nine, who couldn't be here with us today, myself and Jillian on the research team, four members of Moonfish Theatre. We had Zita Monahan, Grace O'Shea, and then Maeve and Junior for part of the process as well. So what was it like? What happened and how did it feel?
We were all shoeless and it was great. No, that is true. It is true. It was a very generous space. I'm going to start with, you know, a little bit of our daily. I'm going to keep it short, but I'm going to start with something which I found very important. We used to have this exercise at the beginning of the day that we called a check-in, in which, you know, we all said how we felt and we put whatever we wanted to put into the fire. Fears, you know, so on and so forth. And the first day I remember, I was terrified and everybody was so honest. And then it got to me and I was like, should I be honest also? Should I tell these people I'm here? And I did. And it really helped because I was a bit angry coming from a very abusive, my artistic soulmate here, we graduated together, coming from a very mentally, physically, verbally abusive theater background. So I was a bit angry and I had a little bit of resentment and a lot of fears and a lot of pain in my body based from an old injury that happened in school also. So just being able to put all that raw fear, and everyone else did it. I mean, it wasn't just me. I got inspired from what was happening. And it kind of created that I'm afraid of using the word sacred space, but I have nothing else. Just that very generous, very frail, and very sacred, generous space of pain, of understanding, of learning a lot, because it was a lot. Like, I remember the first day, will I be able to walk tomorrow? I wasn't, but you know, I tried. it was intense, but it was worth it, you know. Obviously, at the time, we had no idea. 19 months went into thinking, but looking back on it, even with the simple fact that we're here and the mentorship continues through Jeremy too, yeah, I can tell a lot of fun.
Well, for me, from day one, it was just entering this organic safe space. And that was something that I did not expect. I was thinking that, I don't know what I was thinking, but I was expecting some structure that I would need to fit into or show myself in many ways and aspects and form that it was, as Alex said, the check-ins and the fact that we became human there, very fragile, coming from the background. I'm Polish. I do Polish Arts Festival in Limerick, and I know how difficult it was for me to even start and establish any relationship and do so much voluntary work and just work so hard just to get in somewhere. So being in this space, first of all, as an artist, forget about what we are gonna explore, just as an artist to be in this space was just an opportunity that I've never had in Ireland before. And then the openness of the people and sharing of each story made it so profoundly meaningful that we could share tears and we were not afraid of it. Like, oh my God, you're going to think I'm so stupid, or I'm going into that area where it hurts. But the other person did the same. So it was like, if I want to be a part of the process, it has to be truly organic. I can't be pretending, because it's not about that. And I feel that everybody just naturally looking what is happening in the room was just taking off another layer. Yeah, okay. So we can be ourselves. And the building that day by day, I think we just took out from it much more than anybody expected on so many different levels. And the fact that that experience carried on, followed by the mentorship, followed by us being here. And what I mean, it's very meaningful support that we received. It's not just the support to do something for the sake of ticking the box or trying things, but really we just want to try it. Oh, let's see what happens. But we feel very much minded by the whole group. We feel minded, and the relationship that has been built between us participants is beyond the project. So we have become friends and we support each other in letting know what is happening or attending the projects that we do or supporting ourselves in just a phone call saying, oh, what a shit day it was, or what do you think about that? And I want to share something with you. What do you think? And that is really, I think, something that you would never expect out of this 4 days of work that we've been given. And I know, I want the Babber to know that we are ever so grateful for being part of it. And it's amazing work.
Fernanda.
Okay, I don't have too much time. And the only words that I have, and we always talk about that, was magic. I don't know how to explain, and I know that's not the place, but we be able to be human and to share our honesty and our vulnerability, you get. For me, in the moment that I was in my life, was unbelievable. I was coming from a trauma, so I was able to share where I were in a safe space and was just amazing. But I want to say something that was really important, because in the workshops, I also remember you asked for us to bring some ideas. So that's something that was really special, to have a space to share like original idea, if just whatever it was. And I was able to do that in the workshop. And that for me as a professional was unbelievable, because from that I created a show. I had the courage to apply for a bursary. After that, I applied for a grant to be able to produce that. And it's here, it's real. And that's from Leap. Okay. No, I just want to share that, not because of me, but it's really like the concept or the how the workshop and the mentorship that I received from Zita, that is from Mofish, after the workshop was really crucial to make this happen. So this kind of project really have meaning. Like, it's not just, okay, let's talk, let's... It's really a life change for a migrant artist in this situation. And just want to record that.
On that, so we have a text from Justin, actually.
We have a text from Justin.
Wait for.
And I will read that to you.
Justin is, I think, 18 years old. So can you imagine him and all this good poor guy was...
He was part of the project. Hi, guys. I know I haven't been active in a while. I hope you're all doing well and living a beautiful life. I'm currently filming a TV show at the moment and got cast in a new Irish movie. Honestly, since meeting you guys, it was like I adopted a new positive mindset, and it has helped me in getting these TV and movie roles, and I'm finally living my dream. So thank you guys for being so positive. The few days I've spent with you guys has had a massive impact on my life. So I thank you all for that. I know it's been a couple of months, but I just wanted to show my appreciation. All the best, Justin.
I
wanted to add on as well that the Leap also, me personally, I was in the process of putting a show together, and that bilingual aspect of Leap, it's absolutely incredible, because that interests me a lot. And as a Polish Arts Festival, we have done Elemental Tales, which I took so much inspiration from Leap and things. And we've been working on the process through the exercises I've learned during Leap as well. So the process, I could directly implement that into the work. So we have a beautiful show for children. And now I'm looking to take it further into another level and stage. So that's really another tangible outcome of the project.
In the time since Leap, what has been, I suppose, the follow-on for you, or the residue of it in your own practice and life?
First of all, I'm applying to stuff. Yay! No, I'll tell you why. Because being part of a project like this, it just makes you realize that there is a demand for what you do there. There's a demand for you to start doing that work, start applying for those bursaries and grants and workshops, so on and so on. Start developing yourself as an artist. And I know we were talking about this at the Superpower yesterday also, just having that time and people that are like, you are worth it on earth. We are interested in you. So the massive effect that this has had on me is like, so I do have a place here. I am allowed to exist. Talking about that, because we've talked a lot about building relationships and networking, and this is the most important thing in an artist's life. And we're talking about opening that gate. How do I become into existence in this space? And this was it. Mm. It just allowed me to exist as an artist. And of course, I'm working on a couple of projects, one on my own with my illustration, one with my artistic soulmate there, or writing, so on and so forth. But just... it has given me, the most it has given me is just having the right and starting to exist here in the Irish scene as an artist. That was my massive take.
So I'm now going to give the audience the opportunity to ask us questions. I'll also invite the panel that if you have questions for each other on the panel as well, you can also ask questions of each other or the audience. So we'll open it up and I'll repeat any questions that are asked here as we are recording this. Yes. So the question was, there is a great linguistic diversity in the group. So how important was it that bilingualism was brought into the room already by Moonfish and made welcome?
I would love to answer that first, because for me, it was massive. For me, it was the question of identity as well, and embracing the identity of a person, because language is not just a language. It's the whole heritage. It's your story. It's your background. It's the way that you raise your voice and how you do it and how expressive you are, or there's no expression maybe. So there's so much in the language than just the words. So that really interests me. And the exercises that we were doing were so inspiring that even if you do not understand the words, the whole story is there because of the language of the person. And it's not just the language of the words, it's the whole body, is the pitch, is everything. And we actually came to lovely conclusions, which inspired me to work more on the bilingual aspects of it, of the show that we were working with. And even being here now and seeing the languages on the stage, so true. And you can identify with the person, even if you don't understand. This is so powerful. And then in the, for example, if you connect with the audience member that can hear the language, this is so rewarding, because what you see on the face of a child that all of a sudden is spoken to in a mother tongue, it's the moment where you just want to go over the moon in excitement that you haven't thought about it before. Mm-hmm. That it can be so simple. And for me, introducing the language and just listening to the flow, be it Irish, be it Portuguese, Romanian, Polish, well, Polish, my language, but it was so enriching, so enriching, because you were looking beyond the words. And I think this is what we want, to look beyond the words. Mm-hmm. Is it really the words that connect us?
Yeah, it ended up feeling very natural at a certain point.
A lot of conversations. Gibberish. In every language. So we had 5 languages having very interesting conversations.
But also something important to say that hasn't so much come up here is that we had a certain procedure for recruiting people, selecting people that was based in and around identity. There was an invitation in the room to bilingualism, but everyone was centered as an individual artist. This was not about extracting, you know, stories of difference. It was, what is the kind of work you want to make? How do you want to work it? What story do you want to tell? What part of yourself are you bringing to this room? The recruitment process and then the theme of what was actually the content in the room were related in really complex ways. And having looked at this area both here and internationally over a number of years, it really is quite special and unique, and it shouldn't be, given what you're hearing came out of it today when people were centered as artists with certain invitations, but artists first.
It was an incredibly valuable experience for us as well to be working with you in the room, and it was very inspirational to see how those languages were used in the room and to be kind of to have our own understanding of Irish reinforced. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we all speak English as well, so sometimes it can feel that Irish isn't necessary. But when you see what a language means, like you said, it's not a language. It's more. It's your identity. So that was very valuable to us.
I think just to add something about all this, it's really difficult for someone who doesn't have a background like us. Like, I'm Brazilian. I feel in Portuguese. Mm-hmm. I want to cry in Portuguese. I want to hug someone and speak in Portuguese when I'm afraid or when I'm happy. And when you are speaking another language, like, all the time, it's like you lose yourself. So when, like, a day like this, you want to go home, and it's like, I don't want to speak, because it's like you create another character. Mm-hmm. So has the Fernanda who speaks English, who needs to connect with people, who needs to speak a good English. For example, when I'm nervous, when I'm afraid, I can't speak English. I can't. So for situations like a meeting or... That was something amazing in Lip. It was so comfortable. We could be us. Like, the phrase for me is like, I see you, I feel you, I have this space for you that's made for you, I'm here. That is like, I can't really, like, we're gonna cry because we can't say. It's true. I think it's important to say how it's important to talk about love, because it's what we are seeing in all the shows here. We need in this moment, we are just coming from after COVID. So for everybody, like, oh my God, I'm in the room with people. Can I hug you? Can I touch you? No. We did all the tests, the COVID tests. So we were able to touch people. So it was like, can I touch you? Oh, yes. Like in Brazil, we want to hug, we want to kiss. And we didn't kiss, but we had this.
actually have a Tracy here.
But you know, it's amazing to be able to be you. That's the most thing that we are talking about. If you can give this to a kid, so for a kid to come to a show and see, like in my show, and your show, or in the shows you see here, a puppet speaking Portuguese, for them, like, oh my God, I see myself, I exist in Ireland. I'm not someone from, I'm here, I speak it. That's a big issue in schools. You need to give the space. Okay, I'm part of this. I'm not going anywhere. That's my house.
That's a testament also just to Moonfish and the way that you actually create the space, the power dynamics. It was so democratic. And, you know, when you can speak in whatever language, you know, you're not having to force yourself into the power structure's language. It became so balanced and beautiful.
So we have someone, we have, because there's a hand in the, all the way in the back. So we can go here and then, okay, we'll kind of work our way down. So we'll try to be brief in our questions and our answers to allow as many people as possible to participate. Go ahead. So the question is, what aspects of the workshop process or how Moonfish designed it made it feel so safe? So remember, brief, y'all.
Because we've worked as an ensemble for years and years, but we came from a classical background, we had the experience of working in a kind of a more traditional rehearsal room. So we knew what we didn't want, basically. So what we wanted always to create was a safe space for ourselves as an ensemble. So I think the key tools are, like you all mentioned, the check-in at the beginning of the day for people to be able to be themselves and let everyone else know where they're at has been crucial for us in our work as well. And as well, just that democratic attitude that everyone's voice is worth hearing and everything can be tried. We don't work with a hierarchy in the room, and we tried to translate that into the workshop as well, that we are not the directors of the workshop. We are guides. We are going to suggest things, but everyone is, you know, welcome to suggest games. Whatever comes from the workshop is worth it. So I suppose that would be the main thing that we tried to create. I don't know, do you want to talk briefly about
okay. What's real? We are not in the room with the director of the theater that you need to, like, coming as an actor's office, like, oh my God, I need to be good, I need to do good. We're people. Mm.
And we were all shoeless, like all of us. I don't want to say nothing, but even Elaine, or, you know, the producer came on the last day and we sat on them. We put them on, we sat on the producer's about. We put them there on the floor and we sat, like, literally everyone, even whoever was supposed to take notes, and we all participated, and that created the safety net for me.
And I think as well, there were boundaries, you know, that there is like an exercise and this is the parameters of the exercise. It's a moment and then we move on. So it's both the open space and then the boundaries and the kind of structure. And within the structure, then there was freedom.
I'd love to offer as well that I think it wasn't product focused, like there wasn't a performance at the end of the week, and I think that's something that allows for a much more responsive approach in how you design and how you work on a daily basis and how you interact, like, and the vulnerability that people can bring into a room if they want to, when there isn't that deadline at the end of however long the process is, I think is worth noting as an important component in this particular project, but I think probably is true across more generally as well.
Yeah, just to have the appreciation for the process to happen, because very often you want something as an end product and you forget that the process is as much as important as the end product.
It switches the focus from the thing outside of you to you, and I think it really supported Moonfish's process as, you know, ensemble leaders to be able to, like, make a huge amount of space for you guys as individuals and for each of us that were in the room, really to sort of step forward or step back or do a dance.
Now my challenge is being democratic with the audience and getting people and I've seen Marie, and then we'll go to the back row. Marie, go ahead.
Okay, it's not a question, it's more a kind of statement or follow-up from what I will say. So I was on the advisory group and I got really emotional when I heard you guys say that the open call was free, you guys. So I was like, yes, you did a great job. But for me, like, I've done loads of ETI work since COVID, like, but this project has by far been the best, because even like the advisory group, I wasn't a token disabled person in the room. there was others there, and I was like, okay, great, I don't have to carry the boys up as a disabled artist. And the fact that, like, that we didn't, you know, the open call didn't go out on the initial deadline, that, like, Moonfish and Barbara were so brave to be like, no, we need more time. Because, like, with Arts Council funding or any other funding, we're like, we have to have this done because otherwise we won't get funding again. But, like, the fact that the guys were like, no, this project is way more important than actual funding. Although, please do give them some time. Like, 30 times, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just like, what they said they wanted to do, they really wanted to do. It wasn't a tick box exercise, so fair play to you guys.
I hope we got that, because I will not be able to do justice to that. So because that was a statement rather than a question, I'm going to go to the question in the last row and then over to you guys. So yeah, go ahead. Question is, what format was the application in? And if now that you've applied for the program, would you apply in a different way again? So maybe to Rachel and then the participants.
So we offered participants, you could apply, you could either do a recording, voice recording, a video, or written. And I think we did in the own language, which was a whole discussion, because trying to get funding for translators was a whole conversation. I'll hand it over to you guys, because I actually can't remember what you...
There'll be a long report coming out in January, which details all of this in excruciating detail. But for you all, in terms of your... Yeah.
To be sweet and short, I applied in English and through video format, and I wouldn't change a fit a thing because I was at my worst in the video format. I was very nervous and very, you know, reluctant on how I look on camera. But I kind of felt, even when we had that conversation in my house, I kind of felt that is the natural, real, worst way to be, and I would apply in the same way.
I have applied in the written format just because I kind of feel that it gave me the liberty to just say exactly what I wanted to say without and doing it all over and all over again. Because with the video and knowing me, I would be going on and on forever and I would never be perfect. So I said, no, you've got kids, you've got responsibilities. This is the easiest way for you to do it. Because, so I took the only thing is I had to fit it into one page. So I changed my margins because I couldn't fit in. So I was like, oh God. And my friend looked at it and said, well, this looks, I'm like, it has to fit in one page. I'm like, don't comment. It just has to be like that. So that was me. And I wouldn't change it. Maybe if I had more time, but I don't think so. I feel very confident writing. So it didn't bother me.
If I'm not wrong, I think I wrote. And I think I sent some images actually from my work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I did, they didn't ask, but I did like a PDF with some images from the work. It's the extra that
I think
sometimes
we
get.
You could do a bit of a portfolio as well.
Okay, yeah, sorry. They asked it. So I sent, for me, the visual was sometimes more difficult to express because I got nervous and then you need to be in a good mood and with a good face, you know, like all this hair. But I wouldn't change. For me, it was more comfortable that way.
Is it worth saying in the selection process and conversation that happened on the back of the applications, we had a conversation about maybe including more detailed questions in a follow-up application because it would have opened things out. And I guess we had no rubric for marking because everybody was sort of presenting on their own terms. And I think it was a conversation that we had in the selection process was actually, if we were going back, being more specific and detailed in a couple of the questions could have benefited everybody a little bit, but I actually think we nailed it anyway.
But it's interesting when we think about accessibility, video seems like a more open format, but what you've all just described there about self-consciousness and everything else, so we need to keep thinking and rethinking and reformulating, which continues to be the theme of this project.
And I think also just a matter of the call out was written you know, we didn't have, I think I did from Elaine's kitchen, I did a video version.
Yeah, that was great. Oh, God. There was a video.
There was a video. But I mean, but how do we also get our call out in different languages and different formats? Because that is also can be a barrier and a huge process alone, you know, separate from the writing of the actual call out was getting it to different communities and to other channels.
Yeah. That was a massive conversation. Yeah. I would say a couple of months worth of the prep stages. We're thinking about how do we go beyond the networks that are already established to reach people that we don't usually reach. And I think Babro did a mammoth amount of work without actually having those mammoth number of people to do that work.
We have a lot further to go as well.
But the great thing in establishing that as a process makes it easier as you go. There's a cumulative benefit to starting that and to be able to work in that way going forward as well.
So Stephanie need to come in to give this side of space. Then we have Maria and Ashlyn, who's the artistic director. So we have to let her in for sure. So Stephanie and then Maria and Ashlyn. Yeah.
Okay, I have a bit of a big question. So it might not actually get more of an answer right now, but maybe just think about. But let me try and word this as correctly as I can. But how migrant do you have to be a migrant? That is something I know. I didn't respond to the call because I felt that I would be taking up other people's space by applying, and now hearing everything, I know that I was wrong and that I would have been welcome in that space. So maybe even, like, I don't know if anyone can actually answer this right now, but
can I ask you a question in response? And I guess it's if there's a way for you to be able to identify what wasn't in the call out that would have clicked for you, that would be incredible learning in terms of future.
I think it was the word migrant to me maybe ignorantly seems bigger than just somebody who's moved to a different country by choice. I mean, I left Malta by choice for selfish reasons to study. I'm privileged, I have the money. So I didn't feel, you know, I didn't read, are you from a different country living in Ireland?
Yeah.
So I didn't feel like I could relate to that quote.
This was a big question for us. To say that we have like a variety and texture of opinions and understandings here of these terms, a lot of these terms are very contested within Ireland and internationally. I was always pushing from the perspective of my own research over time that we needed to broaden how we were thinking about who is a minority ethnic person within Ireland. Because in saying only this kind of person who we can identify as worthy counts as a minority artist, there's something quite tokenizing about that and somewhat violent and condescending too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think we tried to work through all those and where we got, but there's still more nuance to get. So for anyone who also had the same experience as Stephanie to say to us about where you felt that you weren't there, and then for us to take that back and consider it.
It was a conversation during the creation and then even after applying and, you know, going through the selection, it was like it came up again, and I kept finding myself asking, would I be eligible for this? I'm a white American, like I don't need, you know, things created for me. It became a constant question, and it's important feedback because this is a learning and it wasn't perfect.
I would say as well, the biggest takeaway for me is the best process will be the one with the most diversity. So it's I guess one of the things that we can hear across the entire panel is that language fails a lot. And so the call out will always be a sticky place for people. And I think that having these unique conversations with people, and I would encourage anybody who had that little moment of like, oh, not quite for me, come and have those unique conversations, because that's how things progress.
So we had Maria and then Ashling, and then I know Gizmo is going to make me bring this to a close. So Maria, he's our venue manager for the podcast.
What I actually want is a conversation, but I'm going to try and distill it down to a question. The project just seems so amazing in terms of the outcome, because ultimately we're talking about you had 4 days of a workshop and you speak of it as though it was an epiphany, life-changing, career-changing, and that's a testament to the work that went in beforehand. But my question is, and hopefully I've been to your across the festival and I can get the conversation rather than this question, the barriers you felt beforehand, has the project meant that even if those barriers still exist in other places, you would be now more confident inserting yourself into processes? Mm-hmm. And for those of us that don't have the funding or triple the funding of the of this project who have gatekeeper roles, what is the one or two or three things that we could do simply without doing a lead project that would reduce the barriers that you see when I do a call out or when I'm opening something? What am I doing that is the barrier to you?
I would say that,
well, there's going to be a 60 page report on that, Maria.
Helps a lot to connect with people. I think the thing is networking and space and really like, I don't know how to do that. Can you help me that? Where are you looking for? Because as a, again, migrant, you don't know where to looking for. Because if I was in Brazil, I know all the tricks. I know where to go. Okay, now it's for funding. Now it's in. Even like, I don't know how to create a crew to work with me. Like the show that I did, it's a thing, how could I say, a solo show. I need a producer. I need someone to help. I don't know where to look because it's not close to you. You need to knock the door, but maybe that person is not good for you. So, but in terms of how I think you'd be the most important thing that it's easy for someone without budget, it's networking. That is crucial.
I would answer, add to it, what it gave us, first of all, it gave us the courage that what we do is important. That would be my first, that, you know, this aspect is important and that you're not doing it for your own people, as you would call it, your own small circle, but you're doing it for the broader understanding of the theatre and the work. And that being from a diverse background brings richness to everybody, and that we want to share that experience. And it's not that just ticking boxes, but really meaningfully support the artist by inviting them for, you know, coffee and even organize this event where we can meet each other, because a lot of people just can't meet each other because they don't know who's what, where. And there's already packs created that work together. And it's very hard to break through. Well, I'm always going everywhere. And I said, I don't care. I just have to do that. But you have to learn that. You have to learn how to do that and just not to be afraid. And I'm going on my own sometimes. If I can't find a friend, I'm going on my own. I'm like, I have to find this courage and I will do it. I will just do it.
But it's not everybody who
has this. It's not. I understand. And then I go, and very often you're standing on your own and everybody's having great crack. And then you would be asking yourself, oh God, is there anybody I know I can just pretend I'm here and I know why. And you know what I mean? Those kind of things. And now with years and failures and cries and all of that, you learn that you just go there, you smile, say, hi, this is me. So have you seen any show or something? Just have a starting conversation or whatever. Not like, oh, listen, I need something from you. No, just meet people. And even for the venue to say, listen, we are here if you need a space for rehearsals at an affordable cost, or if you there is this network, or there is something, or if you want to get involved, I would love to volunteer anywhere just to, you know, experience things and build a relationship. Yeah, that would be for me.
Anything briefly before I give it to Ash?
Super briefly. You had more than one question there, so I need to ask them separate. First one, yes, it has given me the courage to apply, even if it's not that obvious for me, because it has made me aware of the fact that I can bring something valuable to the table, which is an information I didn't have before. Secondly, to answer the second part, I would have to ask you the question on how do you make these calls? You know, that's a longer conversation, because I can't give you an answer to that unless I know how you make your own calls.
So I'm just going to say, before we go into Ashland, we actually do have an opportunity. This event will be followed by a reception in the foyer.
All right. We're networking. Ashland, and then we are winding it down. I see Gizmo looking at me.
And on behalf of Barbara, I just want to say thank you all so much. It's been such a rich learning experience, a really humbling experience for all of us. And from many internal conversations with Jennifer and I and the wider team, and
Elaine and then working with Lily Hartigan, with our board, and with all of you in the wider Moonfish team advisory group and everything. So thank you all for coming here today and sharing so generously. We really appreciate it. I suppose maybe just as and something just to mention was something that really stuck with me. I remember when we were having a lot of sticky, tricky conversations over those couple of years now, I guess, was Moonfish talking about just that lack of hierarchy, I suppose, and your excitement at the learning opportunity and the sharing opportunity that you were going into. And that really struck with me that this was going to be a really equitable kind of space, and I think that really shone through then, evidently. But I suppose just very briefly, maybe from the participants, and particularly from Joe and Ionia, if there was, going thinking about looking forward, if there was one thing that you would change, one short, small thing that would make things better for the next iteration, is there anything quickly that comes to mind? If not, I will put you on.
More time.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. More people.
More time and more people.
More people from the who was in the room. From our point, not.
But you see, having those four people in the room and all the other participants that took part, we felt like, is this really for us? All of those guys here? Just because of four of us? So it was very intimate. And I wouldn't say at this stage more people, because I cherish the intimacy that we were able to create by working within that group. Mm. But we were praying for just maybe one more day where you could just have a bit more time to wrap up, to share, because we wanted to. I know that probably you guys know that there was so much to learn and do that we could have easily just spent another week.
I think in front of everybody recording, I think three of us and Justin, we really need to say thank you so much. Like, you can imagine how it's amazing for us also, the mentorship, and to be here today, being able to watch all these shows and having this network, that it's we are like, that's for us? Like, what you did? Like, are you sure? Like, one question for after, why us?
I think you've all made that apparent. Ionia and Joe, any final thoughts on what you're taking forward to change for the future before I wind us down and release us?
So much. Yeah. Hard to condense. It was just an incredibly enriching experience overall. And I think we learned a lot from the process of creating the open call about, like, really, I suppose, looking at that idea of how to connect to more communities. I think that's something that we're just working on continuously. And this has been such a valuable part of that. So I think we'll really, really take that going forward, and how to sustain those relationships. I think that would be for me.
Just to follow up on that and tap into what you said, if you're trying to achieve something similar to this in your own organization, and you want maybe to have a networking event or reach out to people in your community that you don't know, and it doesn't work the first time, have another one, go back and reevaluate, and then have another one. I know it's expensive and takes a lot of time for your staff, but go back again and have another one.
And as everything settles from today, again, there's going to be a long report that comes out in January, along with Babero's equity, diversity, and inclusion policy. We've tried to be comprehensive, to share as much of our learning and our joy as we can with you. And we look forward to you reading it and being in touch with us with your own thoughts as well. Thank you so much to the panelists. Thank you to Babero. Thank you to you all. You've been a great audience.
Thank you to Charlotte.
Yes, a final big acknowledgement to Elaine O'Donovan in particular, who's sitting here in the audience, who did not allow us to bring her on stage, who was the key project and development manager at the beginning there in this very big process. So now go forth and network.